Hi, I'm Jim Daly, president of Focus on the Family, and I want to thank you for listening to this edition of the Boundless Podcast. Your financial gifts make this download possible, so I hope you'll go to focusonthefamily.com/donate. And again, thanks for helping families thrive. Boundless Show.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. Hopefully you had a great Thanksgiving and are now headed into the Christmas season, which we are here at Boundless as well. And we love hearing from you and we love being part of the Boundless community. But of course, we are part of the larger Focus on the Family community as well. And with that in mind, I want to make sure that you all know that we have our year-end giving coming up. And those of you that give through Boundless, we get credit for that, okay? So we want credit for our own giving here at Boundless. Even though you are giving to Focus on the Family, that is where our Boundless budget comes out of. And of course, as we head into year end, most of Focus on the Family's budget comes in through the Christmas and New Year season. So if God tells you, puts it on your heart to give, please go to boundless.org. You can either go through /donate or just find the button or the ad on our page and give whatever you feel God is asking you to give to contribute to the work of Boundless as you finish out this year with us. We love you and we appreciate you. So all that said, let's talk about this week's show. Later on, we have Candace to answer our inbox question. And it's from a guy who kind of feels like as he's pursued some of those Christian women, sometimes the Christian women are a little bit harsh in their rejection and sometimes are a little bit standoffish as they approach him or as they respond to him. And so he's wondering how to navigate that. And then for our culture segment, we have got Scott and Bethany Palmer. They are the money couple. They are back to talk about Christmas budgeting and spending. And if y'all have not even started your Christmas shopping yet, I don't even know what to tell you. But hopefully you have gotten a jump on that. But anyway, they're going to help us navigate just how to do that well and how to go into the new year without completely being destitute, which I know some of us, you know, feel like we already are. So hopefully they will have some great strategies for us. We know that they will. So but here we are for our roundtable, and this is another fun topic. We haven't tackled this one yet here on the Boundless Show. We're going to talk about being in relationships and especially marriages as part of the military, whether you're married to a military person or you are in the military or are anticipating being in the military. I know some of you are just starting out and you're kind of like, we've heard from girls that are just like, can I even marry someone in the military? Because it seems so sketchy. So we have some real life folks here who have been there, done that, and they're going to offer some great insight as to it is possible. Well, hopefully they'll say that. Who knows? We will find that out. But we have got Bill, Becky, and Ruth here. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, great to have you. All right. Well, let's go ahead and dive right into this topic because my dad was in World War II, and that was long, obviously. Let's be honest, people. I was not alive during World War II. I was not alive for that. And so I don't have this experience of growing up in a military family. I have only heard of it secondhand. And so I want you guys to just dive in. All of you have lived it. Let's start out by just talking about what does a military marriage and or family look like? What are some of the unique characteristics? What did you know going into it and what surprised you? Or were there any wake-up calls kind of in navigating that? Because I think a lot of people say, you know, wow, how is this unique? How is it doable? What does that look like? So share some experiences in jumping into that pool.
Well, I went to a military retirement ceremony just yesterday. A friend of mine had completed 27 years of active service. And the point was made by the presiding general that we may bring into the military individuals. There's no question about the fact that we have people from accession sources coming into the military. But we retire families. And somewhere along that journey, when you're in the military, you realize that yourself if you're a military member and you have someone living there at the house, a spouse and your family, they serve alongside you. And we celebrate that at retirements. That's something that if you don't realize it, you'll realize it soon enough. Mm-hmm. And it's a celebration, if you will, when you finally get to that point.
I think it has its own culture that I was not
aware of at the time because I didn't grow up in a military family. My father worked for the government, but I wasn't involved or really knew anybody who was in the military. And then its own language surprised me initially.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you get married before your husband?
No, my husband was already in the Army.
Okay. And so you just signed up for that. All right.
Well, you know, we had to think about it, but I was very young. I was 18 when I met him.
Okay.
And people told me, don't marry somebody who's enlisted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Back in the day, it was like, oh, you look for an officer or whatever. And I said, I wasn't looking for a military to get married.
We have a unique situation. We had been married 9 years before my husband joined the military. So I did not go into my marriage in any way thinking that I would one day be a military spouse. Hmm. And in retrospect, that's probably just as well. I don't know that you can really fully prepare yourself for the life that it ends up being. And on top of that, I'm a British citizen. I was born and raised in England, so I really had no knowledge of the U.S. military culture at all. And he's been in the military now for 11 years.
Hmm.
So,
Okay. So what? So obviously, Ruth, you didn't have really any warning per se prior to getting married. Did the two of you? I mean, Bill and Becky. Did people like warn you about what to expect or say, oh, this is going to be tough, or Bill, here's what you're going to have to do to keep your family together, or what were some of the unique warnings or whatever you received?
I was cautioned early on, in as much as I was going to pilot training right after college, not to, if you could, get married just yet. Pilot training was such a demand on your time. It would be hard for newlyweds to weather that. Now, newlyweds weathered that all the time, but it was a struggle early on in your marriage. Frankly, I met Kathleen a week after I received my pilot's wings. That was God, and he arranged all that. Mm-hmm. And just the same, Kathleen still thought I was a cadet and not a mm-hmm. second lieutenant, almost first lieutenant. It was something that she learned early on. But you know what? It really helped that we got past that initial mission training, if you will, mm-hmm. before we were married.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. I mean, with Doug having gone through basic and his other training, that was really helpful. But I didn't meet him in a military setting. I met him while I was volunteering. So it was interesting. He was moonlighting because mm-hmm. He didn't like to be bored. Mm-hmm. So when he wasn't on duty, he was doing something else. Mm-hmm. So it happened to be that he was a security guard in a nursing home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about I think some people understand generally what some of the unique challenges are with military marriages, but what are some of the things that maybe we wouldn't think about? I mean, obviously, separation is mm-hmm. one, long periods of time, long distance, whatever. What are some of the other things that you guys found yourself up against or find yourself up against that you found were really things that had to be dealt with, worked through, true challenges?
I think for us, we had already had our family by the time my husband joined, so we have 3 children. And when he went to basic, our youngest was 1. Hmm. So we had a 1-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 7-year-old. And, I think I really see it was God's plan. I don't know if I would have been mature enough as a newlywed to weather the separations in quite the same way, but we spent a lot of work on communication mm-hmm. and different ways of trusting each other. He put an immense amount of trust in me in decisions that I made for the family while he was gone, and money is also something that you really need to think about. Mm-hmm. I'm very fortunate my husband trusted me completely with the money, which I'm not sure if that was the wisest decision in the world, but it worked out okay. But if you don't have the trust, I don't know how you can do it, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, I agree. Trust and a lot of communication. Mm-hmm. Probably over-talking, but I I think what surprised me also is that my husband was in, grew up as a squid kid. He was a Navy brat, and I didn't understand the comfort of the military life for him, because he had also told me he'd only enlisted for 3 years and he was going to get out. And I was like, oh, good. Yes, this will be great. So I was a little shocked. But then we had the opportunity to go to Berlin when the wall was still up. And it was an adventure that I would never have changed. But I think initially just a lot of communication, a lot of support and trust of each other, and a huge amount of flexibility. You just need to roll with what's going sometimes, because it's beyond your control. It's beyond what you can plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When we started out, we knew separation would come in there sooner or later. Mm-hmm. At the 7-year point in our marriage, I was assigned to Okinawa. That assignment took me away from the island for 2 weeks out of every 6. There was something going in there that we wouldn't have chosen. I mean, it wouldn't have been a place we would have gone had we been given the option. As it was, we were troopers. We were in it because we knew God was in it. Yeah. That said, because of that foundation, that's how we weathered that time. Mm-hmm. Separation was never why I joined the military. It wasn't to be mm-hmm. apart from my wife that I married her in the just the same category. After that time frame, at the 10-year point when we left Okinawa, we both realized that the foundation we had in the Lord, the fact that God had brought us together so unmistakably that it couldn't have been anything else, we figured out. I mean, Kathleen miscarried during that time. I mean, there were some, of course, if anything bad's going to happen, I was off island. All of that helped us realize at that point in our lives, we could actually get through just about anything having had that experience over mm-hmm. there.
Did you receive support, like from family, from friends, from churches? How did you make sure that you were plugged into support systems, whether through times of separation or just the fact that you needed to find some camaraderie with people who understood how you were living and what you were going through?
I did have a lot of support. Actually, I've been through 2 deployments since working at Focus. So my Focus family really stepped in and provided a lot of that emotional support.
And those were how long each time? Mm.
The first one was 15 months, and then second one was a year.
Wow, yeah.
So we were blessed to have this family. None of my family or Steve's family, my husband's family, are in the military, so we were kind of just not always understood by the families, by both of our families, in the same way as people who have been through it can relate. Becky and I often talked about struggles and, you know, what we were facing. But Bill said something really interesting to me, just now, that once I realized that my husband leaving had no impact, or there was nothing, it had nothing to do with me, that there was 2 separate things. He was getting deployed, but it wasn't because he wanted to be gone from the family. That sounds, when you say it like that, it sounds kind of obvious, but it took me a while to really reconcile that. And that, I would say, was a key learning for me. So once I was able to step back and say, you know what, the fact that he's almost excited about being deployed has no bearing on the fact that he's excited about leaving the family.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So that was huge for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you guys say, I mean, are there some people, and obviously, you know, Bill, I'll just be honest, you know, you're older.
Thank you.
bless his heart. Okay, so you were not in the area as a young couple. You weren't in the era of Skype and FaceTime and texting mm-hmm. and all kinds of communicate. I mean, you really
paid money.
You had to like get on a phone, hopefully, or write letters,
snail
you know,
mail.
In order to stay in contact. I mean, are there some people who just aren't cut out for military marriages, would you say? I mean, and how can someone identify that? Because we're talking to a lot of single people here who, whether they're afraid or whether they don't even know if they're mature enough to enter into some kind of relationship like this, or maybe they're like a Becky who's just young and, oh, I can do anything, you know? What kind of warnings or just cautions would you have for people in knowing what they're up against?
Sure. You're going to encounter circumstances that come up that you could have never have seen before mm-hmm. and never had imagined would happen to you, and how you respond to that might reveal you know, changes in career paths or how you look at your future together. But I would say that, you know, by and large, the military demographics say about 65% come from conservative areas of our country. They adhere to traditional values. They might even self-identify as conservative Republicans. Those folks really don't have that much trouble understanding that when these things come up, we just rely on each other. We draw strength from each other. And let's face it, you're there to serve because you want to be part of a cause that's greater than yourself. Mm-hmm. And your spouse, your family serves alongside you. And they pick up on that as well. So that when it comes time to be at the end of your career, as it was for us, I mean, my daughter read something at my retirement ceremony. It was just so moving. She had been part of that experience, part of that journey with us, and the families grow into that. Mm-hmm. You may not realize it as you're getting there, but once you've reached there and it's time to move on to something else, it's a sad and happy time. Mm-hmm. The family has participated.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if you're not willing to be flexible, or my motto was adventures are us, that whatever it was, whatever we were going into, I wanted the boys to be resilient. But some people, if their support system is, oh, you're leaving, and they cry every time you leave, mm-hmm. to go somewhere, why aren't you home, is really, really difficult. But if you go in with it's an adventure, God's before you, and you guys are going to work together as a team. You know, I wouldn't have changed anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what Ruth said about deployments, I had to learn that he's excited about this new adventure. I'm going to learn something about myself, and God's going to grow my character into hopefully a more godly woman, and he's going to do what he was trained to do. And I think that's the most important thing, is soldiers, airmen, Marines, sailors, whatever, they're trained. Men or women are trained for a mission, and when that mission comes, you need to let go, and you need the support of your family. My mom told me when I went to Berlin, she said, I release you. I'm always going to be your mom, but find a mentor, find an older woman, mm-hmm. that, because we were stationed before there was any of that technology, so mm-hmm. it was snail mail. Telephone calls were really, really expensive. Mm-hmm. So I needed to plug myself into other women or a church family or whatever that was going to be to help us be successful as parents and as a wife. Mm-hmm. And
so you kind of alluded to that a little bit, Becky, and I'd like you guys to comment on this. How then, I mean, I think that there were a lot of things about military marriages and deployment and whatever that are, some people would say, wow, this is setting yourself up for failure. You're going to deal with distance. You're going to deal with, you know, whereas people, you know, talk about in the normal workplace, oh, you can develop emotional attachments with people of the opposite sex if you're in a difficult situation together. What are some great ways that people can safeguard their relationships? And one, you know, maintain that closeness, maintain that structure of accountability, and allow their marriage to thrive despite difficult circumstances.
I think for us, we just made... It actually really changed our lives. It changed our marriage. It strengthened our marriage beyond anything that I could ever have imagined. And it was because we were very, very intentional. Mm-hmm. So the things that we did when he was home were much more intentional. We made sure we spent time together. We made sure that we did things more as a family. We took the time to go away for the weekend and just be by ourselves. By doing that, I think it gave me, anyway, the strength that I needed to get through those times when he was gone. And it's also just a change in your thinking. It's a change in expectations. I finally, after the first deployment, which was probably the roughest, I realized, you know what, I can't put my life on hold, and I can't not do things because mm-hmm. I don't know if my husband's going to be there or not be there for it. So once I came into that realization, then the time, it was just kind of like, well, Dad's here, great, this is a bonus, mm-hmm. instead of, well, your dad's not here again, mm-hmm. and we have to do this by ourselves. So it's just a very conscious, intentional thing that you have to do, but I really think you have to do that with marriage anyway. And mm-hmm. I think in some ways I was forced into it, and it benefited. It could benefit anybody.
Mm-hmm. You have to be very intentional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Scripture tells us that God accredits us through trial. I don't know that we would have known going in about all of the things mm-hmm. that we would have faced once we got there, mm-hmm. but. We saw it as an opportunity, and we certainly saw it as a relationship builder. Mm-hmm. We were very intentional about the times we were together, mm-hmm. and took care of that time. Mm-hmm. And I must tell you, it has really set us secure for the future.
Mm-hmm. I also think church families are really, really important, especially if you're stateside and mm-hmm. your spouse is deployed, mm-hmm. reassigned. Korea was probably initially the hardest. I had a 6-year-old and an almost 9-month-old who mm-hmm. didn't sleep.
Yikes.
So I plugged into a church family that I was their first real military member mm-hmm. Without a spouse with them, and they just were incredible. Mm-hmm. They treated me like a couple. It sounds odd, but they treated me like a couple. Mm-hmm. So when there was a couples thing, I wasn't made to feel left out. I was included into whatever the groups were doing. Mm-hmm. They gave me the opportunity to attend church and be fed and not have to sign up for a nursery or Sunday school or do something. Mm-hmm. They just wanted me to be able to grow and rest in the Lord. Mm-hmm. And I think that was really amazing. When we were stationed overseas, I think it's really important because you don't have your family that you build family. Mm-hmm. And those are probably, if you talk to the boys, some of the best times that we had because we built family. And our oldest, we stayed overseas in Germany for 11 years before we came back stateside, and he was very, very upset initially. Mm. You promised me 3 years. You promised that we would go back home, and that wasn't an option at the time, and we worked through it, and he ended up loving where we were at and asked to graduate from high school. Mm. Where we were stationed, and he was a salutatorian. I mean, I just said, this is an adventure. We're going to do things that nobody else you know has ever done. Mm-hmm. And I think it's made them resilient. It's made them, my motto's also fearless. Just go and embrace whatever it is, the culture, the new opportunities. And I think that they have been amazing in what they've been able to accomplish. But I think you have to go in with a really good attitude, and we can't always go, deployments are hard. And I haven't had back-to-back deployments. I've had breaks between the deployments, and ours weren't quite as long, a year. But we figured out that we were probably separated out of the 25 years he was in about 6 years, mm-hmm. if you added up all the time. Mm-hmm. Away. So you also have to find that confidence and strength in yourself with the Lord's help, and be kind of mom and dad, or dad and mom, whatever that's going to be. But also embrace when your spouse is back home, and what is that going to look like?
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks all of you for weighing in on that. I think that's good, Becky, that point that, I mean, I think there are many of us out here in the audience. I mean, that's something that single young adults can identify with, that idea of you've got to find that support. You've got to find, I mean, because in some ways, y'all lived seasons of singleness, mm-hmm. you know, as single parents, as, you know, mm-hmm. during deployments or whatever. And that idea of how can we, you know, all of you out there, think of right now how you can support and build into the lives of military families within your churches right now. I mean, by helping with their kids, encouraging mm-hmm. them. I mean, you know what this is like. You know some of the sadnesses and some of the feelings of loneliness. And this is a great opportunity, I think, for us to gain community mm-hmm. too, and really be able to bless others in the midst of that. So mm-hmm. thanks, you guys, for sharing from your own experiences.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome.
The shepherds kept be watching over silent flocks by night. Behold, throughout the heavens, there shone a holy light. The shepherds feared and trembled when low above the earth rang out the angel chorus that hailed our Savior's birth. Go tell it on the mountain, over the hills and everywhere. Go tell it on the mountain, Jesus Christ. Go tell it on the mountain, over the hills and everywhere. Go tell it on the mountain, Jesus Christ is born.
Well, hey, folks, we are here for this week's culture segment, and we are always glad when we can get Scott and Bethany Palmer, the money couple, back here on the show. Hi, guys.
Hi.
It's great to be here.
Very good to have you. And I want to draw attention to the fact that Bethany is looking very festive.
Well, thank you.
As we talk
thank
about
you.
Christmas.
It is Christmas time.
It is. I must say, Scott, I'm not really sure what the magenta is doing. That's kind of like...
I thought this was
he's
purple.
He's moving
it's
in
royal
a Christmassy
purple.
Direction.
It's,
it is.
It's
oh, that's
royalty,
good.
Right?
Good. Okay.
Jesus was born.
That's
he's
good.
The king. How'd
okay.
I do?
That's okay.
Are
we'll
we still
take
taping?
It.
Oh, boy.
we'll
right.
take it.
All right, thanks.
But we always love it when we have these two on. And, of course, they are everywhere, including The Boundless Show. But they're always on Fox and being interviewed by all different folks, including our own Focus on the Family broadcast. So you can check them out there as well. But we love bringing them on to talk about money and how we deal with money, how we view money, and then just how we get a little crazy about money sometimes, too. When better to talk about this than moving into the holidays, which I know you both are spenders, and so my first request is that you just do my Christmas shopping for me. Because I'm a flyer, and I really don't even care about this. And I
just give me the credit
done.
Card. We'll go do some work for
okay.
you.
Okay. Okay.
No gonna, problem.
We're going to work that out after this taping,
because
after the show.
Because spenders like to spend not on themselves, but also on others, and spend other people's money,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I love so. Spending
exactly.
other people's
See, I'm
money.
Totally, I'm all over that, because I'm just sitting here, like, writing my list. What am I getting for this person that's halfway meaningful? I don't even know. it just exhausts me. So, but we wanted to bring you two on to talk about moving into the holiday season. And especially, you know, there are some people out there that are agonizing over it. You know, what in the world, you know, how am I going to make ends meet? How am I going to shop appropriately for people? Some people have no plan whatsoever for what they're going to do. And some, you know, families have no plan. Like my family is kind of like everyone just buys for everyone, which means I have a list of like a million people. Because my folks had a lot of kids. That's another story altogether. But anyway, whereas other people are extremely, like, they've been saving all year, and they're like, I'm not going beyond this budget that I've set. And so we want to lean on you guys for a few practical tips for where we go from here. So first of all, do you guys know, I mean, I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but do you have any idea of, like, what the average American spends on Christmas?
Absolutely. Yes, we actually do, because okay. we're nerds.
Now, is this you?
So
it's okay, not
easy
you
to
guys.
Answer.
You guys are above average because okay. you're spenders. But, okay.
The average family in America spends $782. Hmm. Just for gifts. That doesn't include food or yeah. decorations. That's actually out in the retail stores. They spend about $782 per family.
Okay.
And
which is amazing, because that's taking into account people that probably can't afford to spend.
Right, exactly.
Sure.
So you've got okay. some families that maybe drop $3,000, and you've got other families that drop $100. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about that figure, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so that's why so many billions of dollars are mm-hmm. spent in the holiday season. That's why retailers, you know, have started getting ready for Christmas before Thanksgiving now, because they know that people are going to spend. And so those dollars are there and they're ready. And I think it's interesting. People say, are they going to spend more this year or less this year? It seems like every year we're spending more. So we're going to go ahead and assume that we're going to be spending more this year too.
And one other thing that's so hard is that Christmas time is supposed to be a time of giving, a time of enjoyment, a time of celebration. And it ends up being one of the most stressful times of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that big
big money component that comes along with Christmas. If you look at your life, you look at any relationships that you're in, it really has oftentimes major times in our life have a money component to them. Mm-hmm. This particular one happens to be so stressful. And so one of the things that we've learned is how important it is to look at the holidays, your gift giving, in a very, very intentional way. Mm-hmm. Because if you do and decide, A, on how your perspective of money and gift giving, but then also the people who are going to be receiving the gifts. You know, I laugh, I say, don't give a saver a big lavish gift. They'll be all stressed out about even receiving a lavish gift. Uh-huh. So it's very, very important to really be intentional about your gift giving so you can take the stress out for yourself and then also for the people who are receiving it too.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously, had we had this conversation, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, we could have probably relieved the stress of a lot of savers of being like, ah, but now we're, you know, heading into Christmas and the people that haven't shopped, you know, just haven't shopped and they're already stressed for other reasons. So let's talk about like big picture, the person that especially the, you know, because we're talking mostly to singles here, that person. And this is like, OK, one of my pet peeves because I have to buy for everyone in my family and I'm like the single girl and stuff. And then what is this with like couples? They count as just one person. And so then, you know, I just get one gift from them. I'm just saying that's just an aside that maybe
you
needs
need to confront them on that. That'd be my only advice. Hey, you've got five kids. I'm forking out six gifts and you're giving me one.
That's
not going to work for me.
When I bring in, I'm going to have to bring in some kind of like psychologist or something, I think, for that issue or whatever. But big picture, because, you know, we talked about gifts, but you also alluded to the other things that are going on. I mean, it's like stuff that I never think of. You've got secret Santas, you've got parties, mm-hmm. you've got, you know, gifts for your mailman and all these other people that you didn't expect. You've got, you know, the obligatory office party and stuff that you have to, or things that you have to buy an outfit for or something. How, I mean, have you guys set up a plan for this? I mean, how do you guys go about approaching each holiday season?
Well, I think our Christmas party is a great example. We just love to have this open house, and there's, you know, between 100 and 150 people that come through our house in a 3-hour period. Hmm. And so for us, we need to know, we're already talking about that in October. Mm-hmm. What is that going to look like? You know, are we going to do the same menu? You know, how much is that going to cost? And so part of the awesome thing about the holidays is the spontaneity, mm-hmm. you know, but you don't have to necessarily have that spontaneity with big lavish gifts. I mean, you can grab some friends, jump in the car and go look at Christmas lights or do something like that. You necessarily don't have to have gifts for all of them when you show up to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I think when you're thinking about the holidays, just kind of getting your arms wrapped around and saying what's practical, understanding how if you're a spender, it won't even register with you that you're spending money on Christmas until you get the bill on January 5th on your credit card statement and you have a heart attack.
Yeah.
If you're a saver, you're just feeling nickeled and dimed at this point. Mm-hmm. Really, I have to do a white elephant gift, another one. My mm-hmm. brother who got married and has 7 kids, mm-hmm. seven gifts. This is killing me. And so there's going to be those different perspectives. But really, walking into it eyes wide open is really how you're going to alleviate the most stress. And then also setting expectations. We do such a terrible job of setting expectations with our family members when it comes to money. Hmm. And we usually have one very authoritative person in the family who tries to set their own expectations and everybody's just supposed to follow that. But I say, you know what? If you've been out of work 6 months and Christmas is lean, you set that expectations with the people that you love mm-hmm. because they're going to understand. And then there's no pressure. And then there's no driving up to their house on Christmas morning feeling like you're not giving enough.
You know, a lot of people say to us, how do you set expectations? Well, you be honest mm-hmm. and you say, you know what? It's been kind of lean this year. So just so you know, the thought that counts, I'm going to be giving you something, but it's going to be a little bit on the leaner side this year. And you mm-hmm. know what everybody says? Got it. No problem. I mean, there's not some person who's going to say, are you kidding me? You're mm-hmm. not going to give me a lavish gift. I mean, people just aren't like that. But it's when we don't set expectations and people are surprised, that's when the feelings can get hurt. And so it's very, very important to set expectations, especially if you have a big family. If you have a sister or brother who has a big family, I happen to have a foster sister who has a lot of kids, you have to set expectations with that. Either just tell them that you're going to be giving them a family gift. Get them a family game, something that they would enjoy all together, a big gift basket so they could all enjoy a meal together, mm-hmm. something that they can do together versus all these individual ones.
Yeah.
But it does require us to set expectations, and that's really, really important. Mm-hmm. We kind of say, we talk about the holidays as a ready, set, go. And ready really means like individually thinking about each person and what they're going to appreciate. It's funny, we were recently writing an article about gift cards. Not everybody appreciates gift cards. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily appreciate gift cards. Scott loves them.
I love
Can't
gift cards.
Can't wait them. So
for all those listeners out there, send me a gift card.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, really thinking individually about those people or, like I said before, a family, thinking about a family together. So get ready and really individualize your presence. But then set expectations. That is so important, to set expectations. Then you can go and go shopping and do things with that in mind, with all of those different ready, set, go things in mind before you go.
So what are some of the biggest pitfalls, would you say, for each of the money personalities as they head into the holidays? Because I think when you are giving and receiving, you know, from different personalities, you can struggle with the expectations. And someone who's like, you are not getting me something from the dollar store, okay? Yeah. I'm just going to say that right now when I just got you this, you know.
So true.
When I just got you this Ralph Lauren sweater.
So okay, true. So you know what's so interesting? It even starts at a young age. I remember in high school, a girlfriend and I, we started this tradition for 2 or 3 years where we would get each other ornaments. And like the third year that we did it, she got me this like super expensive ornament for the time. Mm. And mine was kind of not that much. And she had like was seriously sad when she received that. Just stayed in my mind of just how important it is to set expectations based on who the other person is, because she is a total spender and she likes lavish things, and I should have probably gotten her something a little bit more lavish. But each of the money personalities, there's five of them, but everybody has two of the five, and that's why it's important to take our quiz and to figure out what your secondary one is, because that's important in gift giving as well, to know the other person's secondary money personalities as well as their primary one. But each money personality kind of looks at gifts giving so differently. It's interesting. My mom is a saver, primary saver, secondary security seeker, and she can't stand it when I spend money on her for gifts. It stresses her out. I literally go down in what I give her because it will be overly stressful for her to receive a lavish gift. My natural propensity is to give a lavish gift because I'm a spender. That's my natural propensity. But seriously, it stresses her out. Wow. So knowing my mom, that has helped me so much. But my gift giving over the last 3 or 4 years, she just is like ecstatic. And the first thing I say is, you know what, mom? I got it on sale. And she's like, woohoo. I mean, I would never tell a spender the first thing when they open the gift is that I got it on the sale. But that is a gift to her, to give her something that she knows I got a good deal on. So that particular money personality is really an interesting one, especially if you on the other side are opposite of that. Another one I think of are risk takers. And risk takers, whether that's your primary, secondary, they love adventure, something different. They're the people who like those kind of odd gifts that you can't imagine to give to somebody. They
like
that.
Like out of the Sky Mall catalog?
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
One of those blow-up pillows that you can lay your head down on the
tray. Or one of those crazy
tray.
Zombie,
so
like zombie sculptures that come out of the ground.
Yes. We should get one of those for Jim. Just bring it by his house.
There we go. But they like something different. Giving them a gift card, that doesn't feel like, that's not different, unless it's to some place like a gift certificate to a restaurant that they've never been to before. So thinking about the other person, what their money personalities, their perspective of money, their God-given perspective of money is, as we consider what we give them, is so crucial and important. And actually, it's fun to see their eyes sparkle as they open the present based on who they are, how God made them.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I was thinking in another conversation I had about gift cards and how from people that I don't know, you know, that's like the best, like, you know, business gift or just whatever. Give me a gift card. What I can't stand is the, I don't know you, I don't really care about you, but I feel I need to give you a gift, and so here is a scented candle. Like, honestly, I mean, how many more candles can I put in my house, people? I just don't know. Okay, so it's tricky, but
that's funny.
Okay, so let's talk just a little bit of like flat out money here. So as we're looking at, I mean, what would you say are just some tips and strategies for one, finding extra money around the holidays, and two, heading into January without literally wanting to just crawl under a rock and die because you know that bills are going to come?
Yeah, I think you just have to track what you're doing. I think you have to track what you're spending. I'm a big cash guy. I have this habit. I got this habit about 10 years ago where I just, every month, I throw a $100 bill in this envelope in my closet. And then when Christmas comes around, that's the money that I use for spending on the kids, because I can personally get out of control spending for my kids. Mm-hmm. And so I've got a lot of the younger guys that I work with, I say, hey, every month, just throw $50 somewhere, just mm-hmm. kind of stash it so that when you get there, you're dealing with cash. You don't have any kind of January 5th blues because you spend in cash. And it's a lot more fun too, mm-hmm. because it's kind of ongoing. If you find something that you just really want to get somebody and you have the cash, you'll just do it and you don't have to worry about it being gone if you have to think about it. So I say, you know, the more you can work with cash, the better. If you are working with a credit card, everybody has the app on their phone. Just see where you're at. Just kind of keep a tally of where you are so that you're not finding yourself with that January 5th blue when you're looking at that credit card statement going, holy smokes, what just happened?
Mm-hmm. It cracks me up because every holiday season, people are like, oh my goodness, this is so expensive. I can't believe it. And wow, it's like, okay, mm-hmm. guys, it's going to come around the next mm-hmm. year again. Here mm-hmm. it is. So it's really important to right away, starting in January, like Scott said, be thinking about it, because especially as we get older, time just seems to go so much faster. And my goodness, Christmas is going to be here again. So it really shouldn't be a surprise to people anymore. I think we know enough, but it's that discipline of just saying, hey, I'm going to stick that $50, $75, $10, whatever it is that's appropriate for you, away. So then it's not as much of a financial burden.
Yeah.
You know, you have those kind of two parts to money. You have the financial part, where that's the dollars and cents, but then you have the kind of day-to-day and how you think about money, and that's, you know, kind of your money relationship and how you think about money, which is different than the financial to-do. But that financial to-do, make sure that you stash them away.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's so helpful, too, in just the sense of purchasing gifts. I mean, it's so much better when I start thinking about that in January and February. So I'm not in that last week rush of, I don't know what to get you, and so you're getting XYZ, or you're getting, you know, and you're just going to have to take a gift receipt because I know you're going to bring it back. Let's talk a little bit about online shopping. What are some of the challenges, especially for different money personalities, as we look at that? Because everyone's talking about, oh my goodness, Cyber Monday, and I hope you maximized it, and there were all these great deals, and you can get so many fabulous deals. I have not seen any fabulous deals personally. I don't know. I'm a little
leery. I still
leery.
Think you have to hunt for your good mm-hmm. deal. And one of the things that I do is I always have two browsers up, and one is looking for coupons for this particular website. Mm-hmm. And you can mm-hmm. usually find one mm-hmm. or a discount code. Mm-hmm. You can find that on one side and then submit that. If there is a place that says promo code is available to enter, there is one out there somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I always say, go look for it. Go mm-hmm. get them. If that's important to you to save during the holiday season, then go ahead and do that. But here's the other thing. It's so tempting. It's so easy to just click, 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 click. Mm-hmm. And that is the challenge with buying online is, mm-hmm. oh, this looks good and that looks good. And then you don't realize. And then you get to the checkout and you see, oh, they had taxes and shipping and handling. And oh, well, mm-hmm. I mean, that's how it happens, because you saw things that you wanted to get somebody and you just kind of forget about taxes and you forget about shipping and handling and those kind of things. So it's really tempting. So we always say, go in, whether it's online or it's in an actual physical store, go in with your limit. What is your limit and what is your list? That is the best way to avoid the compulsive just, oh, I need that or I want that. This is really good for spenders. And Scott and I are both primary spenders. So mm-hmm. we have to do that. And when we don't, we pay for it big time.
Yeah.
So it's really important, that limit and list. And yeah. check it twice, if you will.
Now, are there certain money personalities that are more like where if a person's thinking they have to buy for this personality, they have to get some kind of gift? Or what about, like, I mean, I know a lot of people are into getting experiences now.
Yes.
I mean, I'm assuming that the risk taker would be into experiences.
Yes. Huge. And same with a flyer, too, yeah. because okay. a flyer is all about the relationship side of things.
Yeah.
So for them, a huge gift is going to be, hey, we're going to go whitewater rafting for a whole day in June mm-hmm. when the snow is thawing and you know, the water's fast.
Mm-hmm.
They would love that because, mm-hmm. first of all, they're going to get a whole day with you. Plus, it's an adventure and it's going to be something you can talk about. And so that's a great point that the experiential stuff is just as important as the actual gift. And we see this, you know, true with kids, mm-hmm. whether it's a niece or a nephew. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can take something and make it more of an experience than anything. I mean, we just took our kids the other night out to look at lights. swung by Chick-fil-A and got milkshakes, and you would have thought that it was
you
just
went to Disneyland.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so,
especially our risk taker.
Yeah, especially our risk taker son. He's always up. You know, we're going to get up to stay up late, and we're eating bad food, and this is awesome. So I think that's so true when you're thinking about those money personalities, that you really have the opportunity to do something kind of and think outside of the box. Bethany is a risk taker. And so every year I always buy one or two things that I think she's either going to love this or hate this. And I would never buy it for myself, but it's kind of crazy. And about half the time it does get returned. I'm not going to lie, but at least I tried. Aww. So, but that's the risk,
that.
The risk taker side, and the flyer side is a little different.
There's three money personalities: the spender, the risk taker, and the flyer. And those three money personalities have to really watch it when it comes to their spending. But then also those three money personalities are going to like things that our spender likes things more lavish. A risk taker likes that more adventure, something different. And a flyer wants something that is going to build your relationship with them. So those are more ones that people don't think about. And people don't think about savers and security seekers, that they want things that are more predictable, and they want things that aren't going to cost you a lot of money. It's just fascinating to us how the money personalities, when you really give to a person and who they are with their money personality, they just receive it in such a great way.
Saver and security seekers, they love the gift card. I'm my secondary money personality is security seeker, and I love it. And
he
does. I keep it in my car, because when I'm just out and about,
you get downright giddy about
them. I love them. And I think, oh, I can swing by there, or I need something, I have that gift card. As where if I gave Bethany a gift card, she'd be like, wow, thanks for all the thought, that was awesome. And that would be sarcasm from her. But bottom line is that, you know, it's so fun at Christmas, because just over the years, Bethany and I, when we're buying for my niece and my nephews, we actually are thinking about their money personalities while we're making those purchases. And it adds kind of a different way of shopping, and it's just an absolute blast to do it that way.
It's funny, because my brother-in-law is that way, and he, like, I could buy him, I finally found this pair of pants at Eddie Bauer that he likes, and he just wants that same pair every year.
Security seeker.
Let me just, you know, replace that pair. And I'm like, this is the most boring gift ever. Why am I even wrapping it? You know what it is. And it just, like, drives me nuts.
But see, you're a flyer, so you're like, you want, like, the relationship to be built. Somewhere, and a pair of pants seems kind of impersonal to you, but to him, he loves it. And you just, you should be, that's the other thing, is we shouldn't apologize for how somebody else is. You know, I mean, that's who he is, and be thankful. At least it makes it simple for you.
Yeah. Well, and it was funny. He also is the one that will tell you, he'll tell you exactly what he wants. So we had a party the other day.
Totally.
We had a party the other day, and I made, to put in our spinach salad, these like candied nuts, you know, just candied them, and had them in a little Tupperware to spread on the salad. And he started eating them, and he's like, here is exactly what I want for Christmas. Just make me a bucket of these nuts. So maybe I'll get away from the pants.
There we go.
No, we're now moving on.
Just, you know, give them the nuts and the pants. Just live a little.
A little. A flyer. You know, you say, hey, I'm a flyer.
That'll be a stocking stuffer.
Yeah, there we go.
Exactly.
Maybe I'll wrap the nuts, and we'll see how that goes. So, well, very cool. I think this is helpful for us to head into Christmas. And of course, you know, it seems like all of these holidays stack up against one another. And we haven't even talked about, you know, end of year charitable giving. I mean, a lot of that folks are working that in too. So good strategies, you two, for heading into the new year without completely freaking out, and also honoring the people that you're giving gifts to, because I think that's so important. And some people, gifts truly do resonate with them, and it is their as we talk even about love languages and stuff like that, we all know that, in addition to personalities. So it means a lot to put that time and thought into it. So
absolutely.
Thanks for the strategies, you
two. Thanks for having us.
Find out more, of course, about Scott and Bethany at themoneycouple.com. And remember, you can take the money personality quiz there. So do plan on doing that. And then log in on the blog and tell us how you are strategizing heading into Christmas this year with your spending and with your giving. So we will hopefully hear from you.
In the bleak midwinter, frosty wind made moan. Earth stood hard as iron, water like a stone. Snow had fallen, snow on snow. In the bleak midwinter, long ago. gathered there. Cherubim and seraphim floating on the air. But his mother Mary, in her maiden bliss, worshipped the beloved with a kiss.
Well, folks, we are opening up this week's inbox, as we always do at the end of the show. And as I often do, I have Candace on the line. Hey, Candace.
Hello, Lisa. Nice Hello. To hear your voice.
Well, good to hear your voice, too. And always great to hear your advice as you weigh in for men and women on some of these questions.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm glad to do it.
All right. Well, this week's is kind of an interesting one. This guy is basically saying, I've always been attracted to girls who have a lot of faith, but I've also noticed that a lot of the time, they're the ones who are the coldest and meanest in their rejection. They always say things like, well, it's not God's will for me to date you. I also didn't see why they immediately begin shunning and acting cold toward me, not even wanting friendship. Any help for dealing with this would be appreciated.
Well, I have two questions for this guy. And one is, what do you mean by women who have a lot of faith? Mm-hmm. Are they, we can only do so much, Lisa, because he's not here, but I would just want to start by clarifying terms here. Is he talking about women who are trusting in Christ and who are active in their churches and really walking out a Christian faith, or are they hyper-spiritual, or are they, I mean, it could just mean any number of things, but the fact that if it's true that they're acting in such cold and heartless ways toward him, I would say it's possible that the women he thinks are full of faith may in fact not be. Maybe they're just, you know, acting the part of Christian but not really acting Christianly. What he describes doesn't sound like a woman who is growing in spiritual maturity.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I would really want to hone in on what is the way you're asking and how are you behaving toward these women, because I think there's a whole lot more that has to be going on than merely a godly brother asking a godly sister out on a date to get to know her better, and she says, no, back away! You know, it just mm-hmm. sounds like this hideous rejection. And so I would just want to find out, what's going on in the way you present yourself? How are you pursuing friendship with them? Are you maybe being a little too aggressive or too forward? Do you have someone in your life you could sit down with and say, hey, brother, could you help me? What is it about me? You know, is it that third eye growing out of my forehead? I don't know. Do I need to take a shower? Do I need to work on my manners? Am I coming across, you know, in a way that is offensive to these women? Why do you think I'm having such bad success getting a date with a Christian woman? And it's when we open ourselves up to that kind of honest, hopefully loving feedback that we have the ability to grow ourselves. It really does sound like a situation that he might be targeting being attracted to the wrong kind of woman if he's having no success, or maybe he's aiming too high or just looking in the wrong place. But it really could be that there's something going on in the way he's approaching these women, and that he has a wrong perception of himself, an inaccurate perception, that he's not really aware of all the factors that are going on, and he just needs some honest, friendly feedback.
Yeah, it's interesting because we actually had Anthony Ashley just blogged on something similar to this recently and got a lot of response. And I think there's actually a lesson for the women in here, too. And that is because I've been certainly guilty of this. And I know I have talked to girlfriends that are very guilty as well. And it's that, you know, ladies, we need to learn how to, you know, graciously, if we don't want to date a guy, be able to say no, but then still be able to be kind and in his sphere. Because I do think that what he's saying about this, immediately, if a guy, you know, just because he asks you out and you're not interested doesn't mean that, you know, he needs to be on some public criminal list. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, and
right.
I think we do such a poor job of being kind and gracious and sisters in Christ to just say, hey, you know, not interested in this right now, but I can still, you know, I can have conversations with you. I'm not going to completely treat you like you're blacklisted or you're weird or, you know, make you feel, feel less than in any way. I mean, I think women need to do a better job of that.
Yeah, Yeah. That's a good insight.
All right. Well, good thoughts, Candace. And I think that always, I mean, it's so tough for us to navigate these things. And we wish we could get in each other's heads, and we just can't. And so then we speculate. So I think it's good for you to come in objectively and give some good advice. So, and always, like you said, I would recommend to this guy to bring in that counsel from elsewhere, those people that really know him. So thanks for weighing in.
You're welcome.
All right, folks, that is it for this week's show. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can answer your question in the future, or maybe if you have thoughts about this question, jump over to the blog and leave your comments there on this podcast post. And hopefully we will see you around next week. Until then, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.